Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We know that if you live in an area with significant air pollution, it can make you sick. It can make it harder to breathe, it can increase your risk of asthma. Basically, it can lead to a whole host of health issues. We also know that long-term exposure to air pollution could increase the likelihood of dying from COVID-19. That's according to a recent study out of the Harvard University T.H. Chan School of Public Health. And in the U.S., data shows again and again that communities of color, especially African Americans, are more likely to live near a coal-fired power plant or other polluting facility. All of this, taken together, is laying bare the racial and class inequities the COVID-19 pandemic is forcing us to confront. So we asked people in three different communities to share their experiences with pollution and environmental justice.
The air is so polluted. If you come into our town and stay here about an hour or two, I guarantee you, you would leave with a headache or some kind of stomach ache. That's how bad it is.
Sharon Levine is a resident of St. James Parish, Louisiana, with a population of about 21,000 people. Nearly 50% of those people are African American. And for decades, residents have lived smack dab in a region called Cancer Alley.
If you come from out of state to move into St. James, you will wind up getting sick. So many people are dying from cancer, from respiratory problems, diabetes. It's really bad.
Sharon is also the president of a faith-based grassroots organization formed to advocate for racial and environmental justice called Rise St. James. And residents know where to point for the cause of their health problems.
We have 12 petrochemical plants. We have 9 petrochemical plants and refineries in the 4th District in St. James Parish. And now they want to build a $9.4 billion petrochemical plant that makes plastic, not even 2 miles from my home.
Now Sharon and others in her community are thinking about how COVID-19 puts them at further risk.
We are sick from air and water pollution, and this pandemic is increasing our risk of dying. So our bodies can't take anymore.
Head north from Louisiana to New York City, and Eddie Batista, the executive director of the NYC Environmental Justice Alliance, is also watching COVID-19 exacerbate an already bad situation.
Well, the South Bronx in particular is, you know, often referred to as Asthma Alley, and you have a range of statistics that, you know, public health statistics for the South Bronx that illuminate this. For example, you know, children in the Hunts Point area of the South Bronx are, you know, 3 or 4 times as likely to be hospitalized for asthma impacts than the rest of the city.
In the years that I have grown up, I have seen industry just expand like a poisonous spider web.
And in Southwest Detroit, community advocate Teresa Landrum says she witnessed her neighborhood become Michigan's most polluted zip code. 48217 is filled with cases of asthma and COPD, a chronic inflammatory lung disease, and sarcoidosis, a disease that invades the lungs and basically turns them into tissue paper, along with many other illnesses.
We have asked our state government and the EPA to look at these chemicals on a cumulative level, in which they have not. And now that we're hearing that the EPA is doing rollbacks, what does that tell you for communities like mine that are now in the throes of a coronavirus and killing our people on a daily basis?
We just heard from 3 communities in the U.S., mostly made up of people of color, who are dealing with pollution at dangerous levels. Now we're going to take a closer look at the connection between health issues caused by air pollution and environmental racism. Kendra Pierre-Lewis joins us. She is a climate reporter with The New York Times. Welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me, Lizzie.
Before we get into how race factors into this, can you explain what we now know about the link between air pollution and COVID-19? When we had you on the show just a few weeks ago, some of that was still unclear.
Yeah, so a study came out recently, a Harvard University study, which found that people who are exposed to high levels of what's called PM2.5 pollution, and that's the kind of pollution that you generate when you burn, you know, fossil fuels to power a car or a refinery or a power plant, have a 15% increased chance of dying from COVID-19. And that's holding consistent all other forms of kind of pre-existing conditions. But the other thing that's kind of important to recognize from that study is they teased out anyone who had like diabetes or any of the other kind of cofactors, and that increase was lifetime exposure. So it didn't, like, a small amount of increased exposure of PM2.5 over a long period was enough to create that change. So it's not necessarily that you're breathing incredibly filthy air, but just higher than it should have been.
And what about race and air pollution? How are those two things connected?
They're connected because people of color, specifically Blacks and Hispanic people, are more likely to live in areas with high levels of PM2.5 pollution. So we're more likely to live near a refinery. We're more likely to live on a trucking route. We're more likely to live downwind of a power plant.
A lot of people are sort of counterintuitively noticing that right now there seems to be less air pollution, you know, because of kind of staying at home, et cetera. Why is that? And where does the kind of pollution that you're talking about generally come from?
Okay, so we're not driving, basically. Yeah. It's like we're all staying at home. So because we're not driving, we're cutting away one of a key source of PM2.5 pollution. So that's where you get the thing where, like, people in LA are like, I've never seen the skyline like this. Or people in New York City are like, oh, it smells like the country here. We've just cut car traffic so drastically that we've also cut air pollution. However, if you're living downwind of a power plant, yes, your overall levels might be lower, but you're still experiencing elevated levels because we're still using electricity. And as the study pointed out, it wasn't absolute levels, it was elevated levels. So you're still increasing your risk because of where you live. At the same time, a lot of us are ordering a lot from Amazon, right? So if you live in the South Bronx, you're on a trucking route. So, like, your level might actually be not slightly higher, but slightly different. A lot of those trucks run on diesel. They don't run on gasoline. So you may be seeing a decrease in car traffic, but an uptick in trucking traffic.
How does air pollution actually affect people physically? And I guess I'm wondering how that plays into some of the inequities and racial disparities that we're seeing in COVID-19 cases and deaths.
Yeah, so one of the things that's come up a lot is that we know that there are like underlying comorbidities with dying from COVID-19. So if you have certain conditions, you're just more likely to die from them. One, for example, is diabetes. And diabetes is often framed as a choice issue. But believe it or not, long-term exposure to PM2.5 pollution increases the likelihood that you're going to develop type 2 diabetes, where your pancreas doesn't produce enough insulin. We know that COVID-19 is actually hard on the heart. It's very stressful physically on the heart. Well, PM2.5 exposure increases your risk of heart attacks and stroke. We know it's hard on the lungs. Well, PM2.5 pollution increases your risk of asthma and pulmonary diseases. So everything that COVID is really hard on, PM2.5 is also really hard on.
We're also bringing in Robert Bullard, distinguished professor of urban planning and environmental policy at Texas Southern University. He's also known as the father of environmental justice. Robert, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Can you give us some examples of where in the country you've seen this link between air pollution and race play out, and where this disparity is particularly clear?
Well, for the last 40 years, we've been mapping the geographic location of highest levels of pollution and looking at relationship with health outcomes. And if you look at the non-attainment areas in the U.S. and you look at where they are located, a disproportionate share of those non-attainment areas are inhabited largely by people of color, with a larger percentage of people of color than the general population. And if you look at the link between air pollution and health outcomes, even before COVID-19, people of color were more likely to live in non-attainment areas, as well as living within 2 to 5 mile radius of dirty coal-fired power plants. 68% of the residents who live within a 3 mile radius of a coal plant of people of color. And then when you look at the, you know, map it down to the smallest neighborhood level,
yeah.
Just like you're saying, the everybody who lives in a non-attainment area may be exposed, but you have all these other exposures, not just car pollution, but also pollution from industries and factories and diesel trucks running up and down and communities. So it creates a lot of health problems.
What do we know about families who try to get out of polluted communities? Can they do it? You know, do they have the ability to try to flee some of this pollution?
Well, you have to understand what creates the disparities in terms of where people live. You know, housing discrimination, residential segregation, still big parts of where people live. And discrimination also impacts who's able to escape.
Yeah.
For example, African-Americans who make $50,000 to $60,000 a year, you know, we talk middle-class blacks, are more likely to live in neighborhoods that are more polluted than whites who make $10,000. You say, how can that be? It's because of housing discrimination and because of racism. If you look at the idea of which neighborhoods have grocery stores, parks, green space, and other kinds of amenities that make communities healthy, we can map that by zip code and show you that zip code is the best predictor of health and well-being. And just because you have money doesn't necessarily mean that you can escape the environmental degradation that creates bad health outcomes.
And to piggyback on what Mr. Yeah. Bullard said, last year, I believe, Newsday, which is a regional paper in the New York City, on Long Island, they did an explosive study that found that like real estate agents were explicitly funneling people of color into geographically worse conditions, even if they were financially capable of paying
yes.
more. So like we think of housing discrimination as a sort of vague, nebulous thing, but no, like people are making conscious decisions. So even if you have the income to get out, you may not be able to get a mortgage. And even if you can get a mortgage, the real estate agent won't show you houses that are not in polluted communities.
Kendra, what do we know about kind of federal rules around air pollution in the past few years? There have been some kind of large scale relaxations. What have they done?
The Trump administration has rolled back some rules around like fuel efficiency. They've rolled back recently. They said that during COVID that some of these facilities that often have to report when they exceed a threshold of pollution will not be held sort of accountable to that reporting during this period. But most importantly is basically air pollution overall in the United States over the past few decades has been getting better. We've had less and less air pollution, but that pattern reversed beginning in 2017. And what we weren't seeing so much in 2017 was the result of regulation, because these regulations had not yet taken into effect, but a relaxation of enforcement. So if you're polluting and nobody notices, why would you follow the rules? So there are the policies, but there's also enforcement. And it seems, and we know that enforcement has been declining.
Robert, you've been doing this work for a long time. Do you think COVID-19 will change the conversation around environmental racism and health inequities?
Well, what COVID-19 has done is taken the scab off of a cancer that has been festering for decades, if not centuries. COVID-19 is a perfect heat-seeking missile that is targeted toward the most vulnerable, and what the results are is basically a death bomb that disproportionately impact people of color. Understanding that for many years, this country has been in denial in terms of what needs to be done in terms of addressing these disparities, these social determinants of health. And a lot of it has to do with the built environment and what happens in one community versus another. We know the science behind what makes communities healthy, and we also know what makes communities unhealthy. What's happening is policies of the wrong complexion for protection. Racism basically allocates good stuff to one side of town and the bad stuff on the other side of town, and you don't need to have a PhD to understand who's getting hurt.
I guess I wonder if some of the racial inequities could lead to some white people or some people in power looking the other way.
Let me just say this. You understand that America is segregated and so is pollution. But the fact that if we somehow don't address this pandemic in a way that's equitable, we will impact everybody. The fact that if we don't protect the most vulnerable in our society, we place everybody at risk. So that's the good side of trying to explore this fact that the racial inequities and the disparities that exist will ultimately come home to roost and affect everybody's health.
I also think there's another level that we haven't talked about, which is your exposure risk, right? So I'm calling you from my home because I'm fortunate enough to have a job that does not require me to go out into the world right now.
Right.
But we know that people of color, women of color, are disproportionately healthcare workers right now. We know that if you're low income right now, you're probably getting you're probably still driving an Uber. You're probably doing grocery deliveries. And so the people who are also most directly exposed to COVID are also people of color, doing things for the people who are predominantly white who get to stay at home.
Does that worry you, Kendra, in terms of how people think about kind of putting all of these issues together?
Yeah, because it's not your uncle that's dying of COVID. It's your delivery guy.
Kendra Pierre-Lewis is a climate reporter at The New York Times. Robert Bullard is Distinguished Professor of Urban Planning and Environmental Policy at Texas Southern University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.